and Spanish language programming, created and produced right here at KPFT. Don't miss a second on HD2. Mouse on over to kpft.org or on TuneIn Radio. KPFT, Houston.
And this is Hank Rubicek welcoming you to So What's Your Story, the only originating storytelling show from Houston, Texas. And I am here, and I would like to introduce our guest for the evening, Greg Audell. We have sort of an interesting show this evening. Dr. Thomas Freeman, who is a centurion. He is a debate coach at Texas Southern University, still working, still just, frankly, you're going to hear him in a few minutes, and you are going to be amazed. I'm embarrassed because I'm 66 years old, and I'm retired, and he is going strong, with a capital S. Dr. Freeman started teaching in 1949. That was the year when women first were able to vote. He was born during a year where there were many Civil War veterans still alive and well. He was born during a year when a loaf of bread was 4 cents. He was born during a year when a car, if you could afford it at all, was $647 on average. He was born during a year where most people, if they went to school at all, meaning college, had to pay roughly $8 a semester, and that's if schools cost anything at all. You might think that these numbers are mere fabrications, but boy, I'll tell you, they are not. So Dr. Freeman will be speaking tonight about stories that deal with Barbara Jordan, Martin Luther King Jr., other individuals who he taught at Texas Southern for so many years. And as a debate coach, he's going to offer some very special insight, because as a debate coach, as the study of argumentation is in this country, we understand that it's predicated on two things, and that is having a good logical mind and being resourceful, being informative. And one of the things that he's going to share about debate is how it serves as an academic gauge for what little many individuals know in this country. We were talking before the show a little while ago about what it's like to assign our speech students an informative speech, for example. And he and I agreed that nowadays it's almost impossible to assign an informative speech to a student because they don't know much, but more importantly, they don't care to know much. The internet, social media teaches what we need to be taught, so many people think. And in Dr. Freeman's day, the idea of reading books, the idea of interacting with each other, the idea of knowing things for the sake of knowledge was really the bedrock of success in so many ways. Dr. Freeman is here, and he is going to talk to us about things that, frankly, we never thought about before. We are honored to have him, because we've never had a centurion on the air, and why would we? There aren't many around. But without further ado, I want to go ahead and give you up to my friend and my co-host, Greg Audell, who escorted Dr. Freeman into our studio. We are so, so pleased to have him. He is, in fact, gracing our studio this evening. So, Greg, it's all yours, my friend.
Well, Hank, thank you for sitting in with us tonight. And Dr. Freeman, I am just absolutely thrilled to have you with us tonight. Hank and I have both been a little bit giddy about presenting you to our audience, and I know the audience is going to be excited to hear from you. And I got to say, I have been proud of almost every single show and every single guest I've been privileged to share with our audience during 4 years. However, I think this is a truly special occasion because if you judge experience by number of years, then Dr. Freeman is the most experienced storyteller we have ever had in what is now suddenly a seemingly brief 10-year life of this show. Legend does not begin to cover the status of Dr. Thomas Freeman, who is the debate coach emeritus at Texas Southern University, a school he has been an integral part of for over, wait for it, 70 years. Yes, you heard that right, 70 years, and he has been a pastor at Mount Horan Baptist Church for 68 years. And last month, Dr. Freeman, and I believe the entire city of Houston, from mayor to city council to television to the Houston Chronicle, celebrated last month his 100th birthday. And I am just thrilled that we get to be part of that belated celebration. Dr. Freeman's students have included the late Congressman Mickey Leland, the late Congresswoman Barbara Jordan, who gave the keynote speech at the 1976 Democratic Convention and was recognized as one of our nation's greatest speakers, and a young man who eventually became known the world over as the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., each of whom lost their lives tragically and far too early. But their voices live on and will be heard as long as people walk the earth. And let history remember that there is at least a bit of Thomas Freeman's voice in theirs. Dr. Freeman has a Hollywood connection thanks to his work as consultant to Denzel Washington for the film The Great Debaters. If you haven't seen it, put it at the very top of your queue because you'll want to see it. And after listening to Dr. Freeman, I guarantee you'll want to see it this weekend. And also joining me tonight, as you know, is my friend and the founder of our program and our producer, Dr. Hank Rubicek. I am absolutely thrilled to have you both in the studio, and I'm looking forward to our hour together. Welcome, Dr. Freeman.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Well, it's amazing. You know, but when we were coming into the studio, when we were sitting outside beforehand, you were telling us a little bit about the family you were born into.
Yes.
And that your late sister was an inspiration to us. Can you tell us a little bit about your sister and her name and
yes.
why she inspired you?
My sister was named Carlotta, and my daughter is named Carlotta also after her. She was the second mother for us, with a large family. Mother couldn't be with us everywhere we went, so sister, we called her sister. We didn't call her Carlotta, we called her sister. She was the inspiration of the family, and had decided to give her life in missionary service to Africa. She was a concert pianist and died on the night that she was to graduate from college at the age of 17. She was the inspiration for all of us. And I can recall the last time I saw her. The nurse had her in her arms, and we lived in a two-story house, and I was on the banister, and the nurse was going down, and my sister looked up at me and said, "Thomas, pray." Mm. Those were the last words.
Wow.
She had a condition of affecting the sinus, and of course at that time they had not developed the remedies, so she was a victim. And my father became disillusioned at what had happened. He couldn't communicate with my sister. She did not respond to his words, and even in writing, she could have gave her a pad to write on. She was unable to do so. And my father became disillusioned. What kind of God would do that? A brilliant mind like that, unable to communicate. Of course, he came back. But the fact that she had accomplished more, so much, served as an inspiration to all of us.
I can imagine. And it seems like education was a big part of your family.
That's right. Although neither mother nor dad finished high school, yet they wanted the best education possible for their children. And my father, who was a produce merchant, made it possible for all of the children to go to the college of their choice, except me. And I had to take Virginia Union University right at home because he thought I was too young to leave home. So,
was he right?
No, I don't think he was right in terms of my being too young to leave, but he was right in providing me the kind of education that I received from Virginia University, because that furnished the foundation so I could go to any school anywhere in the world. And so I chose the very best theological school you could find, Andover Newton, the best school, and then the best graduate school, the University of Chicago. And so I have the credentials that will enable me to perform and accept responsibilities anywhere. And I had that decision in my own mind. I was very disillusioned by the preachers that were around me who had little educational training. And I said, that would never happen to me. In fact, I will get the best possible educational training so that I'd be able to stand up against anybody. And though things worked out, I was able to do so.
I can say with great confidence that it looks like you've done pretty well.
Well, I don't know. I haven't done.
I think it's pretty. I think we can say that. You know, one of the things that Greg and I are curious about. We know that when you served as a consultant for The Great Debaters for the film,
yes,
you had to bring some of your own experience to the production.
Yes.
Right? Yes. What were you thinking about in terms of your own experience base, mm-hmm, that you brought as a consultant to that film?
It is hard for me to pull off what I brought. Let me share with you what he expected of me.
Please.
When he came to see me, I asked him, how did you find me? And he said, God sent me to you. And then when he said God sent him to me, I asked him, what do you want me to do? And he outlined a 4-day camp, boot camp, so we could train the actors in the movie. It was his desire to train them in such a way that when the viewer beheld the movie, they would not think that they were acting, but that they were going through the actual process of debate. And so we had to deal with how you develop an argument, how do you defend it? And we did it for 4 days. And I asked him, was he pleased with what? More than pleased.
Wow.
That's the Denzel Washington experience.
So you taught these actors just as you would teach students how to construct an argument.
not just as, but as.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Right.
Well, and they were four full days on our campus. Yes.
We were talking before the show about some of your former students, mm-hmm. and I was wondering if you could tell us about one of them the audience might have heard of, who became known as the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Martin Luther King Jr. was in my class in 1947.
What grade did you give him? I'm sorry.
No, that's kind of right, but I'm going to answer you.
Okay.
I didn't give him consciously. I didn't give him any grade because I didn't even know he was there. I gave a student that registered as Martin Luther King a grade, not knowing that it was the Martin Luther King Jr. It was not until 10 or 15 years later that I learned what I didn't know at that time, that he was in my class. It came about this way. We were sitting at the table having dinner, and in comes an entourage. And at the head, no, second of the entourage was Martin Luther King. I said to my student, look, that's Martin Luther King. And we continued our dinner. Before dinner was over, he came to our table and said, stuck out his hand first and said, Dr. Freeman, you don't remember me, but I remember you. You taught me. And he went on to describe the course that I taught. And I said, I did. Then, from then on, he knew who I was. I knew who he was, so that each of us could identify the other. Then, the year that Martin received the Peace Prize, my brother, my baby brother, who at that time was the conductor of the Czechoslovakia Symphony Orchestra, and he was there. And Martin King, he saw Martin Luther King Jr. at the airport, I think it was. And so I think I'll go up and speak to him. But no, he doesn't know me, so I won't bother him. Then he said, no. I may not get this chance again, so I'm going up to speak to him. My brother tells me that he told me that he stuck out his hand and said, Dr. King, you don't know me, but I... And before he could finish, Dr. King said, oh, yes, I do. You are Tom Freeman's brother. What are you doing here? And then my brother told him that he was the guest for the Oslo Symphony Orchestra. It was the first time a black had conducted the orchestra. And Martin threw up his hands and said, hallelujah.
Wow.
We had an occasion that we spoke at the same place. He did the baccalaureate. I did the baccalaureate sermon, and he did the commencement address. And through the years of his activities, we communicated with each other. Now, I did not march with him, but I prepared students who did.
Wow.
While they were on the front, I was in the back. training them, giving them the kinds of techniques that they ought to use.
Can you give us an example? I'm selfish here because as a communication professor, I'm curious.
Yes.
What is an example, Dr. Freeman, of a technique?
One of the things that I try to get my students to do is to keep under control yourself. Be above and beyond an insult. If a person says something that is disruptive, you try to say something that is constructive. Your approach should be a positive one and not a negative one. You should respect the reasoning of your opponent. Your opponent is possessed of the same materials that you are possessed of. So don't condemn your opponent for what he says. Try to reason to show that what he says is not the conclusion that ought to be drawn from the facts that they have presented.
And in doing that, you teach two things, how to listen actively and something else that nobody does nowadays, and that is not interrupt.
Yes. Right? Yes. Right. Yes.
Sorry, go ahead.
What I was saying is this is great advice for debate, but it's also great advice for life. And I know I certainly don't practice it as much as I wish I did, but I will tell you that after this conversation, I will try to do a little better.
Yes.
I'll try and do a lot better.
Yeah. You know, respect for the other person is so vital. Just because a person differs from your point of view does not make that person any less a person, as valuable as you are. So you should respect that.
Well, one question came to mind. You've talked about your siblings and your parents and the education they received, and your brother was a world-class conductor. You're a world-class debate instructor. Where did this come from in your family?
I don't think it came from any one thing. I think it came from a conversion of things. First of all, a solid religious foundation. And then a recognition of the value of a solid educational background. Just because you want to do something, just because you want to be somebody, doesn't make you somebody. You've got to go through the rigor of training, the rigor of sacrifice, the rigor of long hours, the rigor of disappointments that could have thrown you back and caused you to give up.
See?
So
not
you
only
learn,
this,
you learn how to rise above your failures. And that's because of parents who encourage you to keep going until you get to the top.
And you mentioned earlier about discipline, not just disappointment, but discipline.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
The kind of discipline that makes you willing to sacrifice your time, sacrifice your fun, sacrifice anything that is attractive, which is not in the pathway that leads to where you want to go. where you want to go should always be in your mind. That's where I want to go. I haven't arrived there yet, and I keep on going. So you don't let failures along the pathway, difficulties and problems, and even death, death of that which is dearest to you, you don't let that stop you from reaching out to your goal. Difficulties sometimes are so great that you're ready to throw up your hand and you just say, this is just too much for me. If the inspiration is there, along with the determination, along with the environment that makes it possible, your willpower should guide you to success.
And you did a great job at describing the disciplined student in 1949, unlike the student today. Describe that student for us again.
The student today, it's hard to generalize, but let me say some students today have no sense of morality at all. If an action is desirable, they perform the action. Without evaluating the particular action, say, this is right or this is wrong. I find students today not concerned about doing right, but doing what they want to do.
Yes.
At the moment, this is what, okay. Commitment is invisible so far as this my perspective of this generation. So often, the determinant of what they do is that they want to do it.
It's not going to get you real far in life if that's what you do all the time. We talked, when we were talking about your family before we came on air, you mentioned a magic formula that I think you and I agree can be the core of a young person's life that doesn't seem to exist anymore. Did your family have dinner together?
I don't remember having dinner apart from my family. Oh, yes. It was the time for interaction with each other. You see, with a large family, it's hard to keep up with one who has to go here to throw the newspaper, another one has to go to throw that. But when we all gather around the table, we found a unity that we could not have found before. And an opportunity not only to eat, but an opportunity to interact with each other, to learn what happened to you today, to discuss in a general manner things that are of interest to, and whether they realize it or not, it was laying the foundation for a family gathering. My daughter and son came up for the 100th anniversary, and they were talking about the place that they sat around the table, and each one knew where the other one sat 20 years ago and remembered that it was at dinner time that Daddy was home. But you see, as busy as Daddy was, he made it his business to divert other business elsewhere so the time could be spent with the family. going all of the time, but at dinner time, right with the family.
And how many kids were in your family?
There are 15 of us in the family. And you don't start until all are there. So, yes.
So, friends, if you've got less than 15 kids and you think you can't coordinate your family for dinner time, let me tell you, it can and should be done.
Yeah, well,
and Dr. Freeman is a great example of that. My friends, this is Greg Audell with my co-host for the evening, Dr. Hank Rubicek, creator and producer of So What's Your Story? And you are listening to stories that span a century, which happens to be the current lifespan of my guest storyteller, Dr. Thomas Freeman, debate coach emeritus at Texas Southern University, where he has enjoyed a very brief tenure of 70-plus years. You can always find us on KPFT 90.1 Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 91.9 for our friends in Huntsville. And you can hear every single one of our almost 500 previous episodes at www.HoustonStorytellers.com. Just click the radio program and you will find us.
And when you talk about 70 years, within that 70-year period, I have seen the school grow from one building to 42 and have been at every groundbreaking ceremony.
For how many buildings?
42.
So all but the very first building.
All but the first one being constructed. And then I have been a part of it.
And when you came to Texas Southern University...
I didn't plan to stay. Only 9 months. For I was under contract to return at the end of 9 months. I returned at the end of my 9 months to ask for permission to leave. And I left, not thinking that I would spend my entire professional career in Texas or in Houston or in the Deep South. I was educated in the North and Midwest. And I thought I would be going to the North and then what? But I went to the North and only to deliver addresses, not to teach a course.
Do you think you might stick around TSU for a while?
Just as long as I am able to walk up the steps with assistance.
Well, I can attest that you do that just fine. Now, Hank, in Tatiana's absence, will you fill us in on some of the amazing storytelling activities going on in the story capital of America, Houston, Texas?
Well, let me tell you something. This will all be pretty lame after Dr. Freeman, so it's time to take a nap for the next 4 minutes, everybody. But let's start with the Houston Storytellers Guild. You know, the guild hosts a story swap the fourth Tuesday of the month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at Temple Emmanuel at 1500 Sunset. And the Guild is a great sponsor. It's a great place to listen, tell, and discuss stories to a very supportive group of like-minded people. Their next swap is August 27th, and for more information, go to the Guild's site at www.HoustonStorytellers.org. Greg inadvertently said .com, but it's .org. And while you're there, why not become a member? It's so convenient to do that online. And don't you dare leave that web page before clicking on radio program on the menu to enjoy hundreds of our shows since 2008. You know, So What's Your Story was the first storytelling scene in Houston, and it's the seed that helped grow our storytelling community. So please enjoy our past programs and continue to tune in every week for live stories that connect us to each other. If you don't have a radio, it's not a problem, because you can catch us online anywhere on the globe at www.kpft.org. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. We're all over the place. And if you've got any program ideas, questions about storytelling, suggestions for guest storytellers, or tell us why you'd be a great guest, well, just drop us a note at story@kpft.org, and I promise we're going to get back to you. And if you want to take your storytelling interests to the next level, the Tejas Storytelling Association and National Storytelling Network are waiting for you to become a member. Just check them out online. Our friends at the Moth hold their monthly swap on the second Tuesday of the month at Warehouse Live. The next one is August 13th, and the theme is animals. It's another great place to listen to wonderful stories and, frankly, to some that might need work. But here's the thing. Listen to lots of storytellers and start telling stories yourself. Let me punctuate it this way. Because so much your story is committed to helping you appreciate the art of storytelling more than anything else. And just like writers need to spend time reading so they know what good writing looks like, good storytellers need to listen to stories to understand how it applies features that make stories engaging. And because So What Your Story is the oldest storytelling venue in town, it's vital that we keep it on the airwaves. Just take tonight. Imagine tuning in and not hearing Dr. Freeman. What a waste that would be. The station is all about you, our community, and this program, always fresh and always live, is an icon of community radio. Tomorrow, August 2nd, starts our summer mini fun drive when you tell us how much you love what we do. And you can't rely on anyone else. So next week, when Mary Edgerton hosts another cluster of great tellers, give us a call at 713-526-5738, JAM-KPFT, with your pledges or online anytime at www.kpft.org. Go to donations, then scroll to So What's Your Story as the show that you wish to support. It's only a short week, so do it now or, you know what, you're going to forget. So please make note. You can go up and down the dial and you're not going to find any kind of eclectic programming that we serve up on 90.1. We have the good fortune to be nestled between the Progressive Forum with Wally James, an institution in and of himself, and Lars with the Tennyson Tape Deck, making tonight, Thursday, a power night, but every night offers the eclectic programming that you're going to only hear on KPFT 90.1 FM Houston, Pacifica Radio, fueled for peace. Before we get back to Greg, I'm going to ask Michael if you can kind of chime in for a moment. I know this was unexpected, but yes. I want to introduce Michael, who's a Wally's engineer every week, and he's kind enough to help us out this evening. Michael, thank you so much.
Yes, thank you.
My pleasure.
Chime in. What do you think of this? I know you were a little excited about working the boards when Dr. Freeman is here.
I know.
Thoughts about this evening so far?
It's been amazing.
It is amazing. Yeah. That's a word. It's one of Greg's favorite words, and I think it's worth duplicating. Let's get back to Greg and Dr. Freeman. Thank you.
Well, Dr. Freeman, the word amazing certainly does apply, and I appreciate you sharing your 100 years of experience and wisdom with us, because we have never had the opportunity to get that before, and I just appreciate it tremendously. And we're going to just throw some questions at you, you know, and see if you have any memories of them. Do you have any memories of Barbara Jordan?
Oh, yes. Barbara was the only woman traveler with our team. At the time, only men traveled. Women didn't go. Barbara took her place with the four fellows. Barbara was a very good speaker, but not as good a thinker.
Mm.
So I took Barbara merely to do the opening speech. The fellows did the rebuttal. Barbara just did the opening speech. That was her first year. But in later years, she developed the skills so she could think on her feet. And because of the skills developed, she was able to sit in the halls and declare that her faith in the Constitution was whole, and that she would not sit there and consent to the subversion of the Constitution at the Nixon hearings.
I remember
that
it well.
That training did her well. We, in those days, there was total segregation, not partial, total. We could travel anywhere in the South and find a restaurant that would allow us to sit down and eat. We were in one of the states, I don't remember which, but it was a night, and our kids and Barbara was in the group, were hungry, and there was a restaurant open. I went into the restaurant. As soon as I hit the door, somebody said, "We don't serve blacks here. If you want to get something to eat, go on to the back of the building." Barbara's in the car, hungry. What am I going to do? I forgot my manhood. I went to the back and got food for Barbara to eat. If Barbara had not gone through an experience like that, she never would have been able to stand up to the senators in the Texas legislature. The fact that we emerged from that experience and others like it suggests that there is some value even in humiliation, but that humiliation may open a door for you that would have remained closed had you not accepted that situation. As I sat listening to her, certainly I felt that all of my efforts were not in vain. For at least there was one person who speaking not to the nation, but speaking to the world. Had not she encountered me, had not I encountered her, neither one of us would have had the opportunity of interacting with each other so that there would be some kind of tangible result.
Wow, wow. Your voice really is intertwined with her voice. And let me ask you about her voice.
It was rather interesting. At her funeral, I spoke at her funeral, and as I went out, one of the ladies touched me on my head. "You suddenly do talk like Barbara."
Well, let me ask you about that, because that is the one question I always hear about Barbara Jordan. Where did that voice come from? I was told that that was not the voice that she was had when she was young, that it was a voice that she developed. Is that?
That's true. She did develop it. And when she spoke at one of the tournaments that we had named after her, she said, "The one thing you see regret is that Tom Freeman inflicted on her a voice that she will regret forever."
Why? Because it was one of the most amazing voices I've ever heard. I would listen to her read a phone book.
She said because she couldn't get away from it.
Oh, I mean, yeah, I can imagine. If Barbara Jordan called on the phone, I would probably just sit there and listen to her, even if she was just trying to make a reservation.
All I did really was to just guide her in using the voice and learning how to project the voice. It's more primarily a problem of projection. You have to make that voice of such timber that a person has to stop and listen.
You did. You did have to listen to her. It didn't matter what the interview was about.
And it was the voice, not the content, the voice.
Right. It always is. It always is. It's how you say something, not what is said.
Yes.
Right? We talk about paralanguage,
yes.
How we say things.
Yes.
That's a great, great point.
And I had her for 4 years.
Ooh. Wow. Friends, if you have never heard Barbara Jordan's keynote speak at the 1976 Democratic Convention, make your way to YouTube the moment this interview is over. Bring the kids. You will never regret, and you will never forget one of the great speeches in our nation's history.
Absolutely. Can you take us back to your very first debate tournament?
Unfortunately, I cannot, because the first integrated debate tournament. Barbara Jordan, you see, for a long time, black students or black students representing black schools could not participate in forensics in the South. Because of that, I organized the Southern Intercollegiate Forensic Conference, which was open to the historically black colleges and universities. We met every year, just as the counter-tournament associations met. But when Roe versus Wade was decided upon, there was no need for that organization, so it was disbanded. But before it was disbanded, Barbara Jordan and Otis King were on the team to integrate forensics in the South. They integrated forensics in the South at Baylor University and couldn't even stay in the hotel where the tournament was being held. And thereafter, we would go to tournaments. They would rent a cottage on the lake for us to live in while unable to stay anywhere there. We drove into, I'm going to tell you about the experiences along the way. We drove into a town in Durant, Oklahoma at night, near midnight. They allowed us to leave our girls in the dormitory, but made no provisions for the men. I opened a telephone directory and went down the line trying to find someone whose name might have suggested that they were black. And I called, and it happened to have been a minister, and told them our situation. And he said, "Oh, that's all right. Come on up to my house. My wife and I are leaving tomorrow, and you have the use of the whole house." We, the girls were one place. We were another place. And when the tournament was over, TSU had first place.
Wow.
Couldn't sleep in the dormitory.
I can't help
could
it.
Speak.
I can't help it being astonished by your
but
experience.
But that kind of activity was going on all along. We just didn't know about it.
I mean, you're essentially talking about the film, The Great Debaters. I'm thinking about the Forrest Whitaker character, the minister.
As we sat and looked at the picture, we would relive our own experience.
I know, my God. Yes. You know, I want our listeners to know that that film was based on a very real story, black debaters beating the Harvard debate students. But I forgot the name of the school. What was the name of the school?
Texas Southern University is the number. No, I'm going to give you the name.
Yeah.
Texas Southern University is a school that actually beat Harvard.
I know.
Melvin Tolson was the coach at that Wiley College.
That's Wiley, what, College. Wiley College. Leave it to you to remember. You think your memory is bad? I forgot my name. You remembered it was Wiley College.
Well, I'm just trying to picture in my mind in 2019 America calling someone from the phone book and telling them your situation and having them say, oh, we're going out of town. You can stay at my house.
Students
it was a minister, you remember that.
Right,
and
right.
We're talking about moral value. They had those values then. They don't have those values. I can't imagine that happening now, but at that time,
did you keep up with that minister?
Unfortunately, no, other than to thank him for having been so generous to us, but not in terms of where he is now.
Well, Dr. Freeman, as we've said, I relish the opportunity for this interview to span a century, and we thought, since you are one of our most experienced storytellers, it might be nice to have one of our youngest guests on the show. And I have a young friend here, my favorite 11-year-old in the entire world, Dawson. Mm-hmm. And he has a question that he'd like to ask you, if that's all right.
That's quiet.
What was it like at school at your time?
What was it like?
When you were growing up in school?
When I was growing up in school, I didn't know what it was like to have a white boy in my class. All of those in my class were black. But you see, we didn't think of being black. We didn't think of being white. We just thought of being me. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And what we did in school was to learn the lesson. We had learned the materials. And because we learned our lesson, and I think learned it well, when we finished high school, some of us were able to go off to college. And then those of us who were able to go off to graduate school. And they came back and taught others, you see. And we learned how to accept ourselves as we are.
Huh? Wow. Thank you.
But now it's different, you see. Your friend may be black, he may be Mexican, he may be European. But he's a student in the class, and a student expected to learn. And you're going to compete not just with white people. You're going to have to compete with black people. You're going to have to compete with Mexican American. So you don't base your learning, your training on your race. You base it on the structure that is set up for an educated person. And your goal is to be the best possible educated person. For in the days that lie ahead, education will be so important that if you don't have it, you're not going to make it. You want to make it, so you stay in the track.
Thank you.
Dawson, I think you just got some of the best advice you're ever going to get in your life, and I hope you keep it in your heart. Can you imagine not being allowed to be friends with other kids because they're black, because they're Hispanic? You were only allowed to be friends with white kids?
I can't imagine that in modern day.
That's a very different world, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Dr. Freeman. I'm going to make sure that this young man holds those truths, and I think he will. He's a bright boy who works very, very hard.
And I hope 90 years from now that he is sitting in the studio holding a young man's hand and telling it what it was like when he was 11 years old.
Much success to you.
Thank you.
Dr. Freeman, what would you like to, what thoughts would you like to leave us with? I mean, what do you want us to know about your life and your experience?
There is no one thing I would like for you to know about my life. My life is an open book. Aspects of it can be seen. I interact with people. That makes an impression on somebody. I just be myself. And being myself, I have been able to interact with others who also try to be themselves.
We know how you feel about the world is going. It's going downhill. We know that.
Yes.
But what is a piece of advice, Dr. Freeman, that you can offer that you think is needed in order for us to take a different direction?
I think it will start in the home, the foundation for our society. What goes on in the home will eventually go on in our society.
Amen.
Our society is a reflection of what goes on in society. So, oh, that's terrible. No, it's not terrible. That's a result of what was terrible. So we
well
give
said.
The concentration on development of the family.
And family dinners, friends, family dinners.
Not only social workers, but everybody. This is a condition that must be corrected. Where? No, there is no foundation more contributory to achieving the results that we want than the family itself. The first training is given in the family. Let it be founded on moral values as well as intellectual and social values. Build a strong family. And you may expect a strong society.
I believe those might be the wisest words that have ever been uttered from this studio on any show. And, Dr. Freeman, I also want to wish you and your family a very, very happy 66th wedding anniversary.
Thank you very kindly.
And our best wishes go to your wife, to your lovely bride as well.
Yes.
Well, thank you, Dr. Thomas Freeman, who generously shared some of the wit and wisdom he's picked up in 100 years of living. It has been one of the greatest honors of my life to visit with you and to hear your stories and your insight. My friends, stay put, because the Tennyson Tape Deck is up next. Make 90.1 a part of every day. And while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling out, join us each and every Thursday at 8 o'clock for So What's Your Story? And treasure what you hear. You keep loving great stories, and we will keep bringing them to you. This is Greg Audell, and along with the rest of the So What's Your Story team, we never want you to forget that it is never too late to live happily ever after. Peace, my friends.
If you decided to donate your birthday to KPFT this year, thank you. If your special day hasn't yet arrived, consider donating your birthday to KPFT. Here's how it works. Facebook sends you a prompt before your birthday asking if you'd like to donate your birthday to a nonprofit. Select KPFT as your organization of choice. Then add a personalized message so that your friends know how much KPFT means to you. On your birthday, they'll receive a Facebook notification asking them to make a donation in your honor to KPFT. Thanks again for supporting 90.1 FM KPFT Houston, Pacifica Radio for Peace.
This year, let's go green. To save money in trees, the local station board election will use electronic ballots. Members in need of a paper ballot can leave a voicemail for the election supervisor at 510-854-9663 with their name, address, and telephone number. We are missing emails for many members. Please help by visiting elections.pacifica.org and filling out a ballot request form, including the email to which you would like us to send you your ballot. E-ballots will be issued to all members with a valid email on file. Members missing